It's time for Let Your Muscle with Lee and Phil.
Hello and welcome to the Mature Muscle Podcast. This is episode 10. I'm Phil Agostino. I'm with my co-host Lee Carnaby. I have the pressure of doing this week's podcast on the back of last week's podcast with Greg White, which has gone down exceptionally well. Lee and I are really pleased with it. Today, we are going to cover something that's quite fun. We're going to cover refeeds, diet breaks, and basically like calorie cycling, carb cycling. Those of you who followed me for a while will know that I do something called skip loading with my clients, and I did it for my competition. I will go into what that is, but that essentially involves eating junk food every weekend to make your dieting better. It is as fun as it sounds until you've eaten too much. So we'll go into that. But first, Lee, are you there, mate?
I am. I'm right here. We're in double numbers, mate. Double numbers.
I know. We're very close to our first 1,000 downloads as well.
Yeah, we are.
So that is very exciting. I must admit, I haven't been obsessed with the numbers until we got this last little push. And I was starting to look at, now I'm looking on the website every day going, oh.
Yeah. It's funny, those, if you don't know, these the podcasting platform we use gives you little incentives, little awards when you get to such and such a download or such an episode. So we're like all hooked on that now.
Yeah, no, it is a good feeling. I mean, like I said to you, I do this more for just the fun of it, but it is cool that at the end of the day, those numbers represent how many people we are potentially helping.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's not vanity, man, numbers. It's like it's kind of impact numbers I see it as, and it's super cool to see that, you know, people are enjoying it, people are sharing it, and, you know, coming into the Facebook group, and, you know, there may be people that we really help, and that's what we want. Today, though, it's going to be a little bit of fun, a little bit sciencey, and we're going to talk about things that maybe people have heard about, refeeds, cheat days, that kind of thing, but don't really understand why they're beneficial and actually how to do them properly, because I've even seen coaches and personal trainers get this wrong. So that's what we're going to talk about. We'll start with basically a little bit of science. Now, there is actually, so when I, a bit of context, when I give clients like their first skip load, you know, I might say to them, like, you know, Dave, this Saturday or, you know, Sunday, if they want it, I would like you to eat high sugar foods, junk foods, cereal, sweets, literally that kind of stuff you would say is bad for you for a diet for X amount of hours. And they normally think I'm mental. When I interviewed my client, Simon, just before Christmas, he said, like, you know, when you first said that, I thought this guy's insane. But there is actually a reason for it that is not just about the psychology of it in terms of like a diet break, you know, a mental break. It's actually about the physiological impact it can have as well, which can help you get past plateaus and essentially get down to lower body fats while preserving, you know, your keeping your hormones healthy, maintaining more lean muscle, and, you know, basically getting to, you know, looking better. It must be said, a lot of the stuff we're going to talk about today, there will be people that it doesn't relate to yet. Like those who are, you know, if somebody is morbidly obese, probably isn't going to need one very soon. But as you lean out, they become more beneficial. Having said that, even a good client, my client Simon, you know, had to lose 7 stone. I think 7.5 stone. I brought them in week 6, and he was still, you know, he'd only lost maybe a stone of that 7.5 stone. So it still benefited him.
Isn't it that all of these people are on deficits already?
Obviously, yeah. It's very important to know that. And when I go into the science of why they're important, you'll see why. Like, you know, they literally don't work unless you're in a calorie, you're in a caloric deficit and you've actually lost some body fat, when we talk about the science of it, it should make you go, oh, okay, I get it. And then, you know, I've done skip loading with Skip, you know, and I'll talk about why I'm qualified to talk about it from my mentor and stuff in a minute. So, and all the ways to do it. But, you know, when we came out of the dieting phase, it got to the point when I was eating so much food, but most people don't actually need them anymore because, you know, when you're trying to gain weight and you're eating a lot of food and you're not starving all the time, you don't actually care so much. To put it in perspective, though, my best week was about, I think, 6 weeks before my competition, and I tracked about 15,000 calories on my MyFitnessPal. So it was a fairly substantial amount of food. So the reason why, you know, when you diet, you have a downregulation of your metabolic rate, And that is down to mostly things like a hormone called leptin. Now, leptin was only discovered in like 1994. Scientists and researchers had seen there'd been a relationship, you know, between, you know, body fat and dieting and like and your body weight from like the 1940s and 50s. It took that long to really like identify the actual hormone that was responsible for it. And it's really crucial for anybody who wants to get down to low body fat levels, or somebody who wants to, you know, we talk about this a lot, Lee, like getting down to, you know, losing weight in the way that's the most enjoyable or the most, you know, sustainable.
Sustainable. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So essentially what leptin is, and there are other hormones, but leptin, and again, I'm not going to profess that the science is very complicated and the research is still relatively new. So what basically leptin is, you can be thought about as an anti-starvation hormone. So when you've got high levels of body fat, you actually can have high levels of leptin. As you lose body fat and as you restrict energy, leptin levels fall, because what leptin basically does is it checks for two things: how much body fat are you carrying and how much are you eating. It's basically a survival hormone in the sense of it doesn't want you to starve to death. So right, as leptin drops down, it stops you from feeling full. It starts to signal to the brain, we're losing weight, you know, we're starving to death, stop this. So it starts to do things like, you know, reduce metabolism, bring up your appetite, bring up your hunger, you know, reduce your thyroid, you decrease activity, your decreased immune system, decrease
the sex. You feel more lethargic, so you start feeling
lethargic. And that is one of the things why, like, when people diet, their NEAT goes down, their step count goes down, because the body is like, you know, you're lethargic for low energy. Your body is trying to preserve, you know, it's trying to stop you from starving to death. You also get, you know, like raising cortisol and a decrease in fat oxidization. So essentially it can be thought of like a master controller of body weight. And this is where the kind of the theory of, like, you know, body weight set point comes.
Should we just talk about cortisol for a sec? Because just in case people don't know, that's a stress hormone. Yeah.
Yeah, so the stress hormone.
So if your body's under a lot of stress for any kind of reason, in this case, it's about calorie restriction, your body will, you know, excrete more cortisol as a kind of a byproduct. And that has all sorts of effects on the body, doesn't it? We can go into that later. But just in case people don't know what that was.
A whole episode on each of these hormones. But yeah, cortisol is going to be responsible for things like water retention and muscle loss and loads of other things. You know, we know stress isn't good, right? So basically, leptin is important for that. And what it really does, the most important thing about it is it's, and if anyone's ever dieted to like kind of bodybuilder levels or very lean, you'll know that, and I did it when I did my bodybuilding competition, you would wait 3 hours for the next meal. You would eat the meal, the hunger pain wouldn't go, and then you were hungry. I was quite literally hungry 24/7, probably the last 2 or 3 months. That's because, you know, when people get to around the 10% mark, in some cases I've seen people have like zero leptin in their body. Now if you inject people with it, they're basically, their metabolism comes up. And that's how it was discovered, actually. You know, obese rats, rats that have that have zero leptin, they would move less, they would get fat easily, and they would overeat. You inject them with leptin, they would move more, stop eating so much, and lose weight very quickly.
Right.
So that's basically where it was kind of found, which made researchers think that leptin was going to be the next wonder drug. You know, this is the fuck, we found it, this is what makes you know, people who are obese have low leptin. Actually, people who are obese have very high leptin. What they have is leptin resistance. So they have all this, it's like insulin resistance. They have all this leptin floating around the body, but the signal doesn't get to the brain. So we were saying this before we recorded, and I've been watching a lot of episodes of My 600-Pound Life, where, you know, people get to 600, 700. There was one guy, 32 years old, who was nearly 900 pounds, these Americans. And I, my girlfriend asked, one part of us is like disgusted by it. And a lot of people say, how do you get this big? Those people, the kind of people that have a kind of a shitstorm of emotional issues, probably really bad leptin resistance, and a few other hormone issues that allows them to overeat. This one woman ate two large pizzas, like in one sitting. You know, I couldn't even do that. And that was, so these, the people that are obese probably have very, very high levels of leptin. But it's not doing its job. So they don't get things like the fullness. The appetite suppression isn't there. And then you've got things like ghrelin, which make you hungry, you know, insulin resistance. So there's a whole host of things going on. So the point there is, as you diet, leptin decreases and you get a down regulation in your metabolic rate, less fat burning, and you get hungry is the best way. And you know what happens when you lose weight? What's the worst thing you can be when you're losing weight? Is hungry all the time, low on energy, and you know, not seeing results. It's like a shitstorm, right?
You're looking for quick energy foods, which are nearly always high fat, high sugar, yeah.
And that is the thing we're looking to do. And again, so this won't apply to someone maybe if you have like, 50 to 100 pounds. But if you're someone listening who's, trying to get leaner, or again, you're trying to just control your appetite, then, and this can probably be different. Again, I would imagine this varies from person to person. It's probably so complicated, and testing it is very difficult as well, that it's going to probably be different for everyone. But this is where refeeds, diet breaks, and my version of it, what I learned from my mentor, skip loading, come in. You are basically overeating for a set period of time to raise leptin levels in the short term. Now, the good thing about the one thing about it is the best is carbohydrates, and what you get from that is the insulin, which is why the skip loading is specifically junk food. You want the insulin spike.
It can't be high fat, can it? It can't be super high fat.
Anyway. Does work as well. I've done it when I did my competition. I did very high fat. And when I work, so for those who don't know, like my mentor Skip Hill is a very, very, very well known bodybuilding coach, like one of the most well known in the world. I had him so this is what qualifies me to talk about it. I had him for a year as my coach, but after that, I paid a fair amount of money to be one of his men. He chose like five people to become affiliated to him. So I paid a ton of money to be mentored by him for 2 years to basically be, allowed to go around and, talk about his methods. So that's the reason why I'm kind of qualified to talk about it. And I've used it with clients. Yes, but it does vary for people. But in general, you will limit the fat a little bit, limit the protein, and really try and hit the carbs as being higher. It's the carbohydrates which will help, things like thyroid, leptin, metabolism. And that is what you're trying to do in the very short term is he used to describe it as throwing gas on a fire. Your metabolism is a fire. As the fire starts to go out, you throw petrol on it. You could say gas because it's American. And that's like, sparking the metabolism back up. That is what you're doing with refeeds and diet breaks. Have you used much in the way of refeeds in a structured way, mate? From a physiological point of view, what's your experience with them yourself and with clients, mate?
To be honest with you, not a massive amount, but I have used them as a psychological aid more than looking at the physiological aid, if you know what I mean. So I've people who've been on a long, a fairly high in a deficit calorie plan for a while, I've said, right, on the weekend, I want you to have, a couple of meals where you can just kick back and have what you like, just to get as a bit of a reboost, a bit of an energy boost, if they're on a calorie deficit that's quite strict. And also just to make them feel better, because I think if you were to say to someone, right, I'm afraid you're never going to have those foods again for the next 6 months or whatever, they're going to really struggle with that. A lot of people, we're all human. We want to have those things that we enjoy. So the allowance of having it, actually by your coach say, no, you can have this for one meal or two meals at a push on a weekend. It's an amazing tool at just picking someone's, just maintenance, so they can maintain it long term. I would say that's what I've used it for.
You've actually hit it down on the head with something that I heard Lyle McDonald talk about, and he there was a study done, and I hate to quote it because the study went wrong. They basically let people eat what they wanted, and they were very careful with what they said. They were like, just go back to normal eating for 2 weeks in between dieting phases. And they found these people went back into the diet easier. And what he says is kind of like when someone in a lab coat or when a coach, when someone gives you permission to do it, it's part of the plan. And that's why I try to say to clients, we've had this discussion off the podcast and we were going to talk about it, but that's why using language like calling it a cheat meal is bad, because it's not bad. You cheat on a test, that's bad, cheat on your missus, husband, that's bad. Having junk food in your diet when the coach says do it for X reason isn't bad,
and it's part of the plan.
That's part of the plan.
Exactly, it's part of it. It's an ingredient to the overall kind of recipe, if you like.
Also, a single cheat meal doesn't do jack shit for the physiological side. So from you're right, and every one of us has like had phases where we just need a little bit of food that's normal. Like a good example, especially for women, my girlfriend's, there's that time, and she's just had it a couple of days where she knows that certain periods in her menstrual cycle she's more hungry and she's more likely to binge, so she actually uses the refeeds more of a case of she does them then more from
right, a psychological. That's a good idea.
There's a tip for, like, you know, she doesn't really do it more for physiological because she's quite good at keeping on track. But there's obviously times when, you know, the women listening will know there are times when you crave more, you're hungry, your appetite is out of control. And, you know, that's a time where instead of, like, the psychology of it, instead of saying, no, I'm not going to do it, I'm not going to do it, and then your willpower snaps and you binge, you just say to yourself, right, that period of the time, that time of the month, I'm going to let myself eat freely for a couple of days or whenever. And then you don't, you know, it's not, it doesn't become this thing you're going to, like, you know what it's like when you try to resist something, you snap and you binge.
Yeah.
It's just, it goes back to the psychology of, you know, allowing it.
So yeah, exactly. And like, if you look at the calories as well, if you actually look at the, I mean, the amount of calories you could eat, you know, comfortably if you binged would be, what, say, I don't know, for say a woman who's doing that, so maybe 3,000, something like that.
Exactly. Probably. And yeah, exactly. Like, when
and
I did
not gonna, and that's not going to break the bank in an overall deficit plan, is it?
If you do that twice a month, like, and you can exactly start the rest of the fucking year. No, that's the point. Yeah. But if you do the thing where you resist it. And then, you know, I spoke to someone on the phone the other day where it was like, so I had a couple of drinks one night at a party and the next day I had a hangover and I ate, and that was 6 months ago. Like, it basically, you know what? You basically had one bad day of drinking and that turned into 6 months of being, like, off the diet again. So that's so there is a psychological benefit and a physiological benefit. The physiological benefit is with the leptin and the insulin and the hormone changes to counter the hunger and the slowdown in metabolic rate. Now, you could do this a number of ways, and I've heard Lyle talk about this and other coaches. You know, you could do a free meal. You know, that was something I still see bodybuilders do, where they'll say to their client, on a Wednesday night, I just want you to have a free meal. Or I've seen, like, some coaches say, for example, with whatever their calories are, they're allowed to double it, for example. So if you have a 500 calorie meal, it might become 1,000. But again, the one meal doesn't do enough. So really what you're looking at is in terms of a practical approach, is you normally need several hours. I know, remember, like, some of the stuff that Lyle McDonald, and I quote Lyle McDonald a lot because he was talking about this 15 years ago. Like, so if no one knows who he is, I would Google him. He's got a great website. He's very, very facetious and quite blunt. He's got bipolar and he can be quite rude, but he's so fucking smart. So search him. He's got a great Facebook group. And a lot of stuff I get from him is because he explains things well, that are quite complex, you know, and he talks about the refeeds being, I actually want to get him on the show. You know this, I've already spoke to you about it.
Yeah.
He's actually written a book, to digress, called The Women's Book. If you're a lady, any of the women listening, it's quite expensive. It took him about 5 years to write, but I think it's like 80 quid. But he has covered everything you would ever need. I think there's a part two coming because I think he found more, but that's how complicated it is with hormones. I definitely recommend his book. So for the women listening, it covers a lot about, like, you know, changing diet and training, like, down to, like, you know, down to where you are in the menstrual cycle, you know, but different birth controls. He's gone into great detail with that. That's a bit of a digression, but a bit of a plug for him there. But so
that's all right.
If we're not going to do it. If we're not going to do cheat meals or free meals, what we're going to do is, the way skip loading is done is done in terms of a window of opportunity in hours. Just
I find that fascinating that they go for the hour route, like, it's because you think that's such an arbitrary thing. I mean, somebody eating quickly could eat a lot more in 2 hours than somebody else who eats. You know what I mean?
But that's the point they make, because you are, as Skip used to say, is you are eating for 5 hours based on appetite. If you can keep eating, you needed the food. It's like saying, I'm going to fill up a car based on how empty the tank is.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, that's a cool way of looking at it.
So it's like everyone's fucking done it. They go, I say to every client, don't binge like a child that's been, like, left in the sweet shop on his own. Because, you know, they haven't died, they haven't had anything nice. You know, they have, because we do more flexible dieting, but, you know, they're really looking forward to it. Maybe like week 5 or 6. And then I say, like, you've got 4 hours, and they binge so hard in the first hour, they sit there for 3 hours bloated, and then they end up. I always say, and I've done it myself, I made the mistake a couple of times, you know, but really little and often makes more sense. So there's the first way of doing it. And again, high carb foods, junk foods work well, pancakes, syrup, French toast, cereals, Haribo sweets. And then what I would do when I did my bodybuilding competition, I would just, you know, I think every week until about the last week, I had a Domino's pizza. So that was, you know, that made my diet, my 6 months of dieting, which was hell still, at least beneficial, or at least, like, easier. So then you got the window of opportunity, which is usually, and I know Lyle quoted 5 hours to 12. my client John got to the point where, and I've seen some people skip do it as well, where they got to the point where they could do 12 hours on the Saturday or the Sunday. And then the previous, so my client John got to the point where the Friday night he could eat freely for one meal. And then he was able to do 12 hours the next day. I never got to that. I did it a couple of times. It was kind of just beyond what I needed, which shows, yeah. You know, John's 55 now. So it just shows it. And I'm, you know, you would think just because he's older, his metabolism is not as good. Well, he's, you know, he's muscular and he trains hard and he's, you know, it just goes to showing how different you can be. And I've had people that could only do 3 or 4 hours, but 3 or 4 hours every weekend is still better than trying to like use your willpower to survive 6 months.
Yeah.
So you got the maintenance basically was, and that would be, you could do it in a controlled way. Like some of the way people do it was actually go to maintenance calories, where you would work out how many calories you need to maintain your weight. Like you said, you know, it's more of a controlled, you know, like you said about the women who go to maybe 3,000, you know, I've been on 1800. I'm going to go up to maybe 2,500. I'm going to bring, you know, I'm going to go up and bring the carb. You have to have the carbs higher. With the skip loading, we don't count calories. And the reason I like it is I actually like the fact that there's one day a week when I don't actually have to weigh everything and monitor it. Such, yeah, a nice mental break. And then you've got a full diet break. And a lot of people will do this where they'll actually take 10 to 14 days off at maintenance. It does slow. What you choose might be based on your personality type. Because I remember saying to my client, Simon, you know, he lost 7.5 stone over that year and I think 3 months. And I said to him a few times, do you want a diet break? You know, you're mentally tired. He's like, no, I'm in the zone. Let's keep going.
Yeah.
Getting a 12-hour skip load every weekend. If he didn't have that 12-hour skip load every weekend, would he have needed that diet break sooner? Probably. So that's diet breaks. If you've got to eat, so you've not done any of that like in your own training, I'm guessing. But I think you said the other day you might try skip loading though. It'd be interesting to see how you find it.
Yeah, no, I'd be interested in trying it. It's something I've never played with. I have played around with carb cycling, which is the nearest thing to it, where and also having all the carbohydrates after a workout, things like that. I played around with that kind of thing, but never skip loading. Just the just doing, you know, low carb for 2 days, moderate carb for 2 days, and then high carb for 2 days, and then back to low carb again. I've done that for a while. Yeah. I found that actually was pretty good for me.
That works really well as well in the literature as well. You know, so a lot of the people listening to this will probably follow. And do you find this with people that if they've dieted in the past, they do more like a more of a linear diet? It's just every day is the same, 2,000 calories, 2,000
yes,
calories.
Yes, definitely. And I think that the worry here is that if you were to listen to this, you might think this is kind of yo-yo dieting. But it's very, very far from that, isn't it? I mean, it's because it's structured and it's part of the plan. But just to say to someone, you know, the worry is that someone will take away from this and go, oh, they're telling us to eat junk food. Now, you know, at the face of it, you know, that does sound kind of contraindicatory, if that's the word, to what you would normally be telling people when they're trying to eat healthily. It is, oh, no, that's junk food. But when it's part of the big picture and there's a rationale for it.
Well, that's why I explained the science behind it.
Exactly.
That's why you need to know why. It was interesting because I was chatting to a client the other day who's he's struggling a bit with the hunger, and he's basically doing he's down to like 1900 calories because, you know, he's not moving as much, he's in lockdown, he's training at home, so it's just same as me, my calories are much lower than I would normally need based on the circumstances. And I was saying to him the other day, I said, are you still just doing, because he's quite new, and I must admit he's missed a couple of coaching calls, he's been a bit busy, we haven't had as much communication, which is his fault, but you know, I'm like, we're at week 7 or 8, saying he's quite hungry. One of the things he's been doing is not hitting the protein, so we fix that. But another thing he's doing is he's still on more of a basic plan, which I quite like starting people like this. I wouldn't say if anyone's struggles with dieting and they struggle with all this stuff, it probably isn't worth going to a carb cycle straight away, because it's, you know, every day has to be different. So it's worth saying this is slightly more advanced, but yeah, you know, nothing
quite hard to manage, isn't it? It's quite hard to manage because you're changing and tracking even more than normal.
Yeah, so obviously, what it's like is when something's new, if you've got 20 things to worry about, it's hard to build the habits. But if you get the basics in place, and you know, give somebody enough weeks to lose weight and get in shape and start to look good, feel good, and weigh their food and get into some habits, it does become quite easy to say, right, non-training days I'm only going to have 50 grams of carbs, and then on training days I'm going to double it. Like you start to get into the habit of being able to do it. So he's come along and he's like, I'm still doing it linear every day. And I said, we could try this, because obviously, you know, he's more hungry than he should be. But then sometimes people are. One of the things, he probably needs more protein, so we're going to fix that. And he's adamant he wants to do intermittent fasting. He wants to do it. I'm on the fence about whether it's really working for him. But what we said is, you know, he's doing 1900 every day. I said, you know what we could do? We could do what's referred to as calorie cycling or zigzagging, where you go basically how I do is non-training day, high training day. So there's more calories on the training day, fewer calories on the off days.
Yeah.
I like to be quite extreme with that. And the reason why is, and I said, I like to go quite low on the non-training days. I might go down to, you know, very few carbs, maybe even just green veg, higher protein, moderate fat, and I'm a little bit hungry, to have more calories on the training day. Now, yeah, he hit the nail on the head. He was like, so one day is going to be quite low, one day is going to be quite hard. And I was like, yeah. He's like, hey, I can do anything for one day. And that's the psychology of it.
Yeah.
It's like a lot of people definitely don't like moderation. For if every day is neither good nor bad, it's moderate, it's actually kind of harder. Whereas actually saying to him, you know, if you drop your calories down quite low on the rest day, but you can eat more the next day and use some of those calories for, low, you know, post-workout pancakes or that kind of thing, you should see his face light up. He's like, actually, that does sound easier. Because as I said before, anyone could do anything for a day. And there's where you get the psychological aspect of the calorie cycling or carb cycling, which is usually referred to. But that also will help the leptin levels, because you've got these higher days where the carbs come up and then the days where it comes back down. And how you manage that, I mean, that's been done in the literature with there's a famous study where they did 11 days of dieting, I believe it was, and then I think they did 5 days of not cheat days, they were just told for 5 days, which they usually do in the literature, to just eat normally. They don't want to, like, say, you know, have a free-for-all. And Lyle, in one of the podcasts I was listening to recently, he quoted a couple of others, but they're always very similar. They compare linear dieting with alternated dieting of high and low days of varying patterns. And, you know, what tends to happen is they tend to always lose about the same amount of fat. Obviously the ones who have the carb cycling often don't lose as much muscle, but they tend to not rebound after. And then in one of the podcasts he said, you know, they did something like 3 days of dieting, 4 days off, and versus 7 days of dieting. And the conclusion was that there was no benefit to that. And he said, how could there not be benefit? One of them was you only dieted for 3 days.
Yeah, the psychological, like, benefit.
Yeah, there's a psychological benefit. You get the same. You got the same result from psychologically doing less. Yeah. I would much rather diet really fucking hard for 3 days and then have 4 days where it's easier than 7 days where it's kind of like, it's a bit moderate.
That's exactly it. If you're following a calorie-restricted diet, you know, you're in a deficit. So which means, you know, you shouldn't be that hungry, but you are still restricted. And there's some light at the end of the tunnel. You know, whether it's skip loading at the end of the week, you've got something to focus your mind on. Go, right, doesn't matter, you know, because on Saturday I can have a load of Haribo and I can have some pancakes with syrup or whatever it is, is your fix. That it's got to be easier than just thinking, well, this is it for the next 3 months.
Yeah, exactly. And so then you've got this thing where you got a double whammy of it's psychologically easier. It's as best you can. It's maintaining your hormones that you don't get too hungry. You don't down regulate the metabolism. So you get a little bit leaner. All of those things together make for a much more beneficial diet than you kind of just going by sheer willpower.
And you being happier.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the best ways to do it. You've got refeed days. You've got, you know, the full-on diet break, which is a lot of people talk about the full-on diet break for being, I talked about it in my book, and then you've got, like, yeah, basically you've got like calorie cycling or you know carb cycling, zigzagging. All these things are usually designed to kind of keep you more interested in the diet and not let your metabolism drop and you to lose muscle. And that is very, very effective.
Maybe just to clarify as well, just for me as well as people listening, let's say you've got a certain number of calories per week that you often do a weekly calorie goal, don't you?
Yeah.
So if you're doing zigzagging on the days that you're lower, you know, would you then just compensate on the zag of the zigzag, if you like, when you're eating more, so that totally over the whole week the calories are still the same as if you're on a deficit for each day? Do you follow me?
Yeah, so basically, so I've done that with my, so you've got to remember, so a lot of my clients work well, especially pre-COVID, business owners going out for, like, you know, dinners or their sociables, and this is what I think is more it's more likely to be more like a lifestyle. It takes a bit of consideration, but instead of saying here's your average, you know, these are your calories for the day, 2000 2000 2000, you've got to think of it more like here's a weekly budget of calories. But I still want, with some caveats, you must hit this much protein every day. you must get roughly this amount of fat because we want to get some fat for good health. But really, and then what really you do is juggle. That's why really when you're talking about carbs, calorie cycling or calories exactly, and I call it calorie budgeting, what you're really talking about is just moving the carbs about.
Yeah, so that's pretty much what it is, isn't it? Because if you need 250 grams of protein per day, then that's a non-negotiable. That stays.
Yeah, there's your, but, you know, it's like the money analogy. Here's how much money you have. You've got this much money for the week, but you still got to pay your rent, buy petrol and do these other non-negotiables.
Yeah.
Then there's some things you kind of need to do, like, you know, maybe like Netflix, you need it, but you don't need it. And then you've got the whatever's left over to be like is your disposable income. It's very similar. And carbs basically are, you know, within reason, your the ones that kind of vary. And that works very well, you know. Again, you know, we're kind of almost slipping back into what we talked about before, but it's worth mentioning that makes things very easy when you've got a more sociable lifestyle, or, you know, the summer comes, you've got to go to a barbecue. For example, you know, it's my girlfriend's daughter's birthday tomorrow, so we're going to have some cake today because she's, you know, going back to her dad's tomorrow, and I don't know if we're going to eat today. But what I've been thinking is like, okay, I'm down to the lowest I've been for about, well, I'm down to the lowest weight I've been in probably about 6 months. I've done a bit of extra walking, I've saved some calories, so I'll have some cake. I'm not going to eat much, but I'll have some, and it just gives me that little bit of kind of confidence that I'm not going to completely ruin it. I wouldn't ruin it, but I don't want to slow it down. It's probably And that's the same way sometimes it's hard for people to do the diet break, because it gets into such a, you know, the momentum is there. The idea of stopping is hard. So I can't remember many people from my personal experience of clients haven't done many diet breaks, but I think that's probably because I bring the skip loading in quite quickly.
Yeah, it's almost unnecessary if you're doing skip loading, isn't it?
Really? It probably is more of a and I don't know if we get Lyle on, I was asking that question. It's almost like if you get to the point when you need 2 weeks off, you may have probably pushed slightly past, maybe you missed some signs and you've really stalled, and that's where you think shit. You know, the point when you probably need a diet break is when you are like, I hate this diet now. I can't.
Yeah, you're ready to jack it all in. Yeah. Stage.
And this is a good example. You'll see it all over social media. Like, my coach was magic. He made me eat food and I lost weight. Well, no, that's because, you know, with all due respect, women do this quite a lot. You know, you've been on 800 calories and doing like marathon running. You put your body in the ground. All your coach did was put you back up with carbs, give you some more calories, and you lost water weight and, you know, and sped your metabolism back up a little bit, and, you know, you lose weight. It's not, and that's where, you know, that's where it comes from. It's not because you know, some coaches have found some magic way to let you eat more food all the time. It's normally come that you've been crash dieting for so long, and that is what happens. So sometimes the diet break comes to the point where you can't physically do, you can't pull the fat off anymore. So if anyone listening to this is like, wants to do bodybuilding competitions or photo shoots and stuff, and they may have to do this more, because you've got to take things with a pinch of salt on social media, because let's be honest and like express the elephant in the room is a lot of those people you see have done drugs. So a lot of the down regulation in hormones that you get when you diet for competitions, like metabolic rate, you can counter with thyroid medication, testosterone, you can counter with steroids, you know, you can use clenbuterol, you can use all these things, which actually essentially are doing the job of what a diet break and skip load is doing in a way.
Yeah.
And therefore, you know, you might look at these people and think, Jesus, that guy got ripped in 16 weeks and he looked, you know, he's got all this muscle and he looks much better, but you don't know what he took.
Yeah,
that is what I was listening to a podcast with Lyle yesterday, just to brush up on some of this, and that was, they were talking about, like, you know, natural athletes or just general public seeing a lot of stuff on Instagram and social media and not realizing that, you know, they may need to take longer, and some of that might be diet breaks and refeeds, and you know, this is just about a lot the long game, especially.
Yeah.
I think it's good though, because if anyone takes anything away from this, you've got to be careful, because there'll be people that who struggle with introducing junk food, so be careful. I've had times where, like, I did a skip load and I left some of the food on the side because I just, you know, bought too much. I came down the stairs Monday morning and I was like, man, I want to eat that. I just chucked the shit in the bin.
Like, my worry would be, you know, unless somebody's pretty well disciplined and they're really aware of how it fits into the plan, is that would turn into a cheat day, you know, like, I don't like using the word cheat, but you know what I mean? Of bad eating.
The way I countered that, so this is the reason why my skip loads were always on a Sunday. because Sunday is the day where I'm going to rest. You know, we tend to do them, Skip normally says, to have them on a rest day. So you can kind of literally no training, no cardio, you know, I can eat what I want for a few hours. And it's quite mentally relaxing. And when they get to like 10, 12 hours, I would just, especially when I was competing, I would just sit and watch TV all day and eat. That's how tired I was. But I did it on a Sunday because when I woke up on Monday morning, to me, Monday was the start of the week.
Yeah, ready to go, like new week.
If I do it on a fucking Saturday and I eat on a Saturday, which is probably a better idea because Saturday feels more like, you know, a sociable evening to sit with the missus and watch TV, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I went on Sunday morning, I'm like, Sunday is still the weekend.
Yeah.
Logically, it still feels like a chance to just eat. And that was a struggle for me. So when Skip was like, what day are you going to do it on? I was like, Sunday. And that was purely a psychological choice. Sunday, because I would more chance of waking up on Monday and going, well, you know, Monday back on the grind.
Yeah.
So that's, yeah. So there will be people that struggle with this. And I've had clients in the past who have, you know, really struggled with the post-workout sweets. You know, a lot of us, I had Wheatos or I have Cocoa Pops or Haribos. And I had one lady that tried to do it with that kind of thing. And she didn't binge because she had the discipline, but the sheer, but having those sweets made us crave so much, it wasn't worth struggling with the temptation.
Yeah, and then you have to kick it again on Monday morning, ready for another week. Yeah.
So she went on to just having like post-workout fruits and stuff like that, and just, you know, we just found different ways to do it. So you do have to be careful. You do have to go into this and think of it as this is a structured part of the diet. It's not a free-for-all. Even if I skip loading, it isn't a free for all. I still say to someone, it's 4 hours. If you didn't eat your favorite fruit, and I did it many times, especially in my diet, where I wanted to sit in the evening and eat the Domino's, and I would get to the point where I'd be like, I'm so full, I can't do it, and I couldn't even order one, and I'd be pissed. So I started eating them early in the day because of that. But you know, part of me at times would be like, you know, would another half an hour hurt? You know, would 11 hours hurt?
Yeah.
So you do have to be careful. It is a structured part of your diet in the same way as if I say do 3 days in the gym, you do three and not two. If I say do half an hour on the treadmill, you don't stop after 15 minutes. If I say do 5 hours of skip loading, you do 5 hours of skip loading, not 5 hours and a minute. So
the other thing, like you said earlier, is it'd be something that you would integrate into it after several weeks. You wouldn't go from day one like, oh, right, this is the diet we're doing. This is how I want you to eat. And then immediately on the Sunday, your first skip load day. It might be 6 weeks, 8 weeks before you start introducing it anyway.
I get this. And I go, like, client would be like, oh, Phil, when are we going to do the skip load? And I'd be like, motherfucker, you've been skip loading all your life. That's why you're fat.
Yeah, exactly.
Why don't you just cheat meal or a skip load after week one? Don't ask me about it. You're fat because you've eaten junk food most of your life.
Yeah.
You don't deserve it yet. You need to earn it.
There's a guy I used to follow quite a lot, and I loved it because he used to say, you've got to earn your carbs. You can see his first thing he would do is put people on a lot higher protein and a lot lower carb than they were used to. And he said, you're not going to have the carbs until you've earned them, until you've been in this program for a while, you've built up some muscle, you've dropped some body fat, then you can start earning your carbs.
That is true. I've heard it. And I've heard, I don't know if we're talking about the same people. I've definitely heard a few.
Phil Lerney, actually.
Phil Lerney said it. I think Poliquin used to say it as well.
Poliquin used to say it. Yeah.
Rest in peace, old Poliquin.
I know. Tragic, that, wasn't it?
Yeah. So it's a really good strategy, and it has scientific merit. It works. I've seen it work. I've been doing it. I started doing skip loaded. I would be brutally honest. I chose skip as my coach for my bodybuilding competition. I think I did my competition in 2015, but I was part. He's got a really good forum called Intense Muscle, and he's got forum posts on there from some of the best bodybuilders and nutritionists on body in the world from like the 1990s or the early 2000s. And there are threads there that are so interesting. You could get lost all day if you're interested. But I was part of that forum. I remember reading about this guy that was like, he's known for getting people in like what he refers to as like, you know, being skinless. He's skinless kind of condition. And I used to think to myself, Skip gets people in that condition while letting them eat junk food. If all things being equal, why would I not choose him? So that's why I went to him in the first place.
Yeah.
Because I thought it would make my life easier. Could I have done it without them? Of course not. I was, you know, when I did my competition, I wanted to do it. But why would I not do it if I could? And when he was mentoring me, we had this discussion over email. We would say, look, all things being equal, if two people stand on, if you could clone yourself and you could stand on stage and look the same as your clone, but one of you had a 10-hour skip load every weekend, why would you not do it? Like, yeah. Why would you suffer if you don't have to?
So and also, you've got to look then as well, because often, I mean, you'll know this, and I know a friend of mine did a bodybuilding show. It took him about 2.5 months, and no kidding, for his hormone levels to go back to normal. He didn't just bounce back, you know, back to the gym the next day. He was a ruin of a man for about 2 months. I'm sure if you know, after skip loading and that kind of, and, you know, having refeeds, you would bounce back much quicker. I'm convinced of that.
Do you know what? That's like, you know, especially if people are natural doing it, by the time you get on the stage, you feel, I said to people, yeah, I don't believe in heaven, but if I had dropped dead that day and I'd seen my dead body laying on the floor, I would have not been surprised. That's how bad I felt.
But by the time you had a good looking corpse.
Yeah, I would have been like, make sure you get me a see-through glass, you know, like a glass coffin. That'd be super cool. But yeah, and make sure you oil me up. But no, but that's the thing. Like, it is, I felt like shit. So if people, you know, we're talking about things that a lot of the people won't get to. I mean, there are a lot of, you know, people listen. There are a lot of guys. I know there are a lot of guys and girls listening to this that do like endurance sports. And one of the things it does, you know, it repletes, you know, it lets you fill up the glycogen at the end. So I found my training sessions on a Monday were, you know, Monday morning's cardio or Monday's cardio was like, I tell you, to put it in perspective, I pretty much just used the cross trainer for an, and I, by the time I finished, my got closer, I was doing an hour in the morning, an hour in the evening. On a Monday, level 25 for an hour, the highest it goes. I remember there was 1 week by the Saturday's last cardio session, I was on level one.
Yeah.
There was one evening where I had to move to the treadmill and I could barely walk. I almost fell over. I nearly blacked out from the low sugar. So, but at the start of the week, lovely. So you've got
this. That's a good point, actually. For runners out there who still want to maintain a good run or whatever. I mean, swimmers, whatever your poison. If you're following this kind of plan where you refeed on a Sunday, like you said, your workouts on Monday would be fresh as a daisy, wouldn't you?
Well, also, you know, this is really good, and this is why I liked it. This is a bodybuilding talk, but a point. But what I've had with clients that do triathlons and sports, and I had one lady that was into like got into the Great Britain like triathlon team for her age group, things like that. Is after a while we got to a point where I was like, wait a minute, every Sunday or Saturday, we know that you need about, you know, you can handle about 9 hours of carbs. We know what carb sources work best for you, not to give you gut problems. That became and we knew how many days it would take for the water to fall off, and you start to see the patterns. So what we started to do is when the competitions came up, we actually just moved the skip load we actually made the skip load their carb up, ready for competitions. We knew what foods like they did well on. We knew what made them energized, and actually that meant I knew we had a lot more information on how to actually carb these athletes up.
Yeah,
prior to actually doing stuff, rather than they've had no carbs for so many time, they've been like running, then, you know, the day before a marathon or something, they're like, they eat something wrong and they have the shits, or they feel shitty or whatever, or they don't carb up enough because they don't physically know how many carbs they need. So yeah, it was actually it's quite cool, but that goes back to just tracking, because it's part of the strategy. It's not like you just eat junk food. I typically ask them what they've had. We know how many hours they've done it. I, you know, monitor how much weight they gain in terms of water. You know, typically I would gain over 1 week, I gained 17 pounds of water. That's a stone of water weight.
Well, the carbohydrates drags all the water in with it, doesn't it? So
So those who don't know, like, you know, the muscle stores glycogen, which is basically, you know, carbs and water. And you typically get about 3 grams, like 2.7 grams of water for every gram of carbs. So it's like almost three times. So if you're eating, you know, 1,000 grams of carbs, which I was doing easily, or 1500, you're gonna get three times that in water weight, and then you've got, you know, food volume in your stomach. So I would gain typically, I mean, 1 week, like I said, I gained over a stone, but I knew that that weight would always come down to what we refer to as baseline.
Yeah,
by about, and that's what we refer to as, it's the baseline, it's your previous lowest weight, normally by about Friday. And then I'd get on the scale Sunday morning for checking with Skip, and there you go, 2 pounds under baseline. And then I'd say that, it'd be like, you lost 2 pounds, cool, add another week in. Go off, and then that was what we do with clients. We'll basically add a week here and there, and then, you know, might get a week where it doesn't work as well, and like, okay, you know, we found the sweet spot, you need 8 hours, and that's the base that we figure out. But you can't do that unless you're, you know, tracking it and doing it with a parameter, 5 hours, or, you know. And I think, you know, I think for a lot of people, doing it as a time frame is a far nicer way to do it than saying, on your day off with food, I want you to use my fitness power to put your Domino's pizza in. It kind of takes away it takes out the joy of just being like, whereas a time frame forces you to eat to your appetite, you know. I can't eat anymore. I've got half an hour left, and then I'm full. So yeah. That.
So it's your choice to stop almost.
Yeah, and then sometimes you're forced to stop, and then you're like, fuck, I'm full. I have 45 minutes left. I can't physically. Maybe can I eat anymore? No. Oh, fuck it. I'll see you next week, skip load. Like, I see it, yeah. I'm done, yeah. Basically. So so these things, again, but we've kind of gone off on the point. The underlying point is it has a metabolic and a hormonal benefit to it.
Yeah.
Has to be taken in context of, like, you are, you know, you're probably you're probably using having fewer carbs. I mean, you know, I'm, because again, you know, you and I were the same. We don't say that you have to do a low carb diet, but when your calories are reduced and your protein is high and you've got some fats, naturally your carbs are reduced.
Exactly.
From
exactly.
So you're on fewer carbs than you probably would be, not like zero, but they're fewer. So you're on lower carb. You're probably training harder. You're probably doing more activity, more step count. You're leaning up. You're going to need to refeed that at some point. And then it makes it a very, very beneficial. For me, it's a very beneficial strategy all round. Once you, like we said, deserve to do it. You know, you've emptied the tank a little bit. You've worked hard. You've lost maybe some weight. Again, the reason why the leptin reduces is because you lose weight and you restrict food. That's the signal to the body. So you don't really need to do it after 1 week. And as I said, if you're fat, you've probably been eating, doing refeeds all your life. Like, yeah. You need to bring those leptin. You need to probably reduce the, you need to bring down your insulin, improve your insulin sensitivity and your sensitivity to leptin. And actually, from a mindset point of view, like, get in the fucking game a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, earn it. You know, show yourself you're committed. If I always find that strange with clients when their first question is about cheat meals and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's a bit of a red flag, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm like,
yeah. Fuck. Right, should we wrap it up, mate?
Yeah, I didn't realise we've been talking for 46 minutes, rambling on. But anyway, yeah, so that's...
I think it was good ramble.
Yeah.
Good ramble.
I think so, no. As a recap, like, there is a genuine need for refeeds at a certain point, from a physiological point of view and a psychological. And I, just as a side note, I remember Skip saying, even if I have clients who are very mentally strong, they don't want the skip load, they are still giving it because it's physiologically beneficial. You don't have to feel like you need it. But normally, 9 times out of 10, you're not going to get many people to say, oh, no, Phil, I don't want to. I do get it, but that's normally because they're a bit paranoid about doing it versus not wanting to do it.
Yeah.
So go slow with it. If you are going to do a skip load or a refeed, start with like maybe a 1 hour or 2 hour window or just a big meal, and just assess what it does.
Yeah.
Make sure you do it. It's like a light switch. You do it, you're back on the diet. Give yourself permission to do it. Like, now you've heard us say it. Like, I've done it for my competition. I've done it with all my clients. Lots of people do it. It's a very, very well researched topic now. Give yourself permission to do it so that you don't feel guilty about it.
Yeah.
So then you don't then like think, oh no.
And don't
like,
call it a cheat. Don't call it a cheat day.
Yeah. Go into it and be like, this is a scientific approach that they've done in the science. Scientists do it. Researchers do it. Top coaches do it. It works well. Keep it structured, whether it's an hour, like a time frame, or a certain meal. If you want to be more controlled, track it. Say to yourself, right, I'm going to let myself have an extra 1,000 calories today, mostly from carbs. And if you want to track it, cool, that's fine. I wouldn't say don't do it. I like not doing it because it's nice to have the break, but some listening will be like, no, Phil, I want a bit more control. Do that.
The accountants out there want that.
Do it. Forget about it. The next day, back on the grind, see what it does to your weight loss. If it doesn't, you know, you see what it does, you'll typically find, and this is quite a nice, before we end, a nice side note is, I'll give someone like a 4 hour skip load or a 5 hour, and they'll be like panicking, and the next morning they'll message me, go, Phil, I only gained a pound. And I'll be like, there you go, you've just done 5 hours of junk food, you only gained a pound. That kind of takes away that worry. You know, a lot of people still worry about the scale weight, don't they, in the short term, for example. So I hope that sums it up. Do you know what we've forgotten to do? We need to announce a winner of our competition. We could just do it tomorrow, though. We could just do it like in the group, maybe.
Yeah, cool.
So I think most of the people shared it, even we just do it on our pages. We'll do that and we'll announce it. Hopefully that helps everyone. That is refeeds, what's referred to as full diet breaks, and essentially like a calorie or carb cycling or zigzagging. If anyone has any questions about that, you know where we are. Do share this, please. You know, we are trying to help as many people as possible. If you're not in the Facebook group, join the Facebook group. If you are in the Facebook group, feel free to post questions, post videos of you doing training. Like, I feel like we need to try and push that to be more of a community, which
definitely.
When there's more people in there, you know, there's always going to be a small percentage of people that are more vocal on Facebook. You know, we've only got 350 people. When it's maybe 10,000, of course, it'll be way more active. But, you know, if you're shy, if you've got a question, don't be shy. Post it. If you've got an article you've seen, or you want something, you've got an idea for a topic or something, post it in the group or contact us, and you know, we'll be more than happy to help, or we'll do a show on it. You know,
And as always, give us a review on whichever podcast platform you use. Give us a review or give us a rating. That'd be great. And cheers. Cheers, Phil. That was a good one, mate.
Cheers, mate. See you later. Cheers, guys.
If you enjoyed this episode of Mature Muscle, please subscribe and find us on most social media. Until next time, stay shredded.